This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Ryan Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow online at cvilletomorrow.org, and he joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk a little growth, development, local politics, and all that good stuff. Welcome to the program, Brian.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Absolutely. And before we get started into this, take off that hat, put on your school board chair hat, Albemarle County school board chair. Congratulations on the first day of school.
My 12,500 or so kids all made it safely to school, as far as I know today.
Is it really 12,500 students?
I think so.
In Albemarle County?
Give or take.
My God.
It's funny you asked that, Coy, because at the beginning of the school year, we start with a certain number, but then there's what's called the 10-day enrollment window. And so during this first 10 days, it sort of fluctuates a bit. And actually, a lot of people relocate to Charlottesville and Albemarle County and don't realize we start school before Labor Day. So they're sort of, their summer's continuing, la-di-la-di-la.
And they're freaking.
And
gotta get you a backpack.
Then, what? School's already started? And so after the first 10 days, we sort of lock into a more accurate
Why do
number.
We start before Labor Day? It was starting after Labor Day was good enough for us, and we
have
kids.
So many good things we need to do with these kids. Well, we just need more time.
All right, that's the political answer. What's the real answer, though? Really, why do they start like in now? And
well, if we didn't start now, we'd be finishing later in June. So you can either start now or finish later.
Because snow's not a problem anymore.
It's not. And of course, you know about the Labor Day holiday. Well, what's it called? The King's Dominion Rule is what it's called. And that's the state law says you have to start school after Labor Day, unless you get a waiver.
And they all get waivers?
Most of the localities in Virginia get waivers because of things like weather.
So they should just repeal that law.
Well, the...
Because they don't need that cheap kid labor anymore. They get them from Eastern Europe.
Every time it comes up, it doesn't go anywhere in the General Assembly.
I will tell you, I was just at King's Dominion last week with my 7-year-old daughter, who rode the Rebel Yell, by the way. 7 years old,
her.
She rode the Rebel Yell. Oh, she's not
That's
afraid of
That's the wooden
anything.
Roller coaster.
Yeah, it's great. I hadn't been on it in almost 30 years. She's not afraid of anything. Every other person working in that park hardly spoke English at all. I mean, really. They're so Eastern Europe or Asia.
Yeah.
So yeah. Why do we need this law anymore? We need to, you know, you should be able to start school when you want to.
We should just, you know, bring workers up from the Southern Hemisphere. Isn't that what they do at Wintergreen? Yeah, Wintergreen, you go up there and it's like people who are having their summer, right?
Is that what it is?
I guess that doesn't work. No, because then we want people in the northern. No,
I'm
all mixed up.
So the school started today, and at Albemarle High School, there was a big deal going on over there.
We opened the Math, Engineering, and Science Academy, known
Ooh.
As MESA.
Wow. Now, that's a pretty big deal, isn't it?
It's a big deal. It was part of the renovation to Albemarle High School, so there's a brand new addition on the front of the school as you
I
drive
saw
by
that. Yeah.
On Hydraulic
They're working
Road.
On that all summer, weren't they?
They have, and August is the month of miracles at schools as they finish up these projects.
Yeah.
So they've gotten a lot of work done. And
Hurry
we
up and get the drywall mud dry.
But the kids were there early today. They got there an hour early to help celebrate the opening.
Is this like a school within a school?
It is, and it's open enrollment. So students who would normally attend other high schools like Monticello or Western can apply to get into the academy.
Really? So it's like, you know, Fairfax County has that Thomas Jefferson School, which is a math and science school.
Mm-hmm.
This is like that, but in Albemarle High School.
Within a school.
That's very cool. Will this have its own building one day, you think?
Who
It'd
knows?
Be like another whole school?
Right now, it's got a great facility at Albemarle that it's interesting, Coy. They've left a lot of the mechanical equipment exposed in these rooms so that the students can learn, how buildings are made, how the mechanicals work. And
That's very cool.
They can see everything.
I like stuff like that. Yeah.
Sort of like the WINA studio sometimes.
The reconstruction that never ends, but it's looking pretty, isn't it? You seen those new studios?
Yeah, down? They're looking good.
It's looking really good, really pretty. Speaking of looking good, y'all announced some news recently. Some very big news broke recently about Charlottesville Tomorrow going into business with the Daily Progress.
We did announce that partnership on Sunday. It's very exciting, and this was something we've been working on for several months and finally came to the point we were ready to share the news.
I believe you never told me, Brian. You never even whispered.
I kept it
You never said,
very
hey, this is embargoed, indefinitely embargoed, but you did keep it hush-hush.
Well, you know, you don't want these things to, you want them to work out right, so you have to be careful.
I think your assumption was that I would tell somebody.
I don't know, Coy. I trust you. But you are very connected in the media industry here locally.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, it's, you know, in fact, Coy, we've been partnering with local media ever since we launched. The very first thing we did at our press conference in 2005 was I put up on the PowerPoint a snapshot of our blog at the time. It had one article in it, I think, and the article was a story idea. You know, here's a situation happening in the community, you know, local news media, you might want to give this some attention.
Yeah.
That evening it was on the 6 o'clock news. And so we've been putting story ideas out there and trying to engage the local media. And actually when we cover these meetings, work in partnership. So if somebody comes in late, you know, at a meeting, and we all come in late sometimes, you know, we ask the other person what I miss, where's this going, where's this conversation going, when are they voting? And we often get phone calls and try to help everybody who has questions about what's happening in local government.
And Charlottesville Tomorrow has had a partnership with this program at WINA.
Oh, I've been coming since over three years. Yeah.
Yeah.
I went back and actually found the first show.
Get out.
It was like March 2006.
Sean had that file somewhere?
Oh, yeah. Sean has everything.
If it's sound, Sean has it. That's amazing. We're talking about Sean Tubbs, of course, the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, and also works at Charlottesville Tomorrow. That's so what did we talk about on the first day?
I didn't listen to it. I just saw that.
I think we talked a lot about what Charlottesville Tomorrow is.
I think you gave me that. Give me the Brian Wheeler 101 speech.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, so we have been partnering with local media. So in that way, it's not new. In a big, exciting way, it's new in that now our content will be featured in the Daily Progress with bylines and links back to our website. So that's a unique partnership.
In the print version, too.
In the print version.
So it'll be byline Brian Wheeler, byline Sean Tubbs.
That's right.
People who write for Charlottesville Tomorrow.
With our logo, and on the website, it'll point back to our site. And maybe, you know, we haven't written a single story yet, so we're still working out
the
details.
Did they say that you basically have the growth and development beat? I mean, is that how this is working out?
No, it's not. We're going to see how this goes. But at this point, no, it's not to replace work that the Daily Progress would normally do. But there may be times when they can't be at a certain meeting and we could cover it. There may be times where we're both at a meeting and the Daily Progress does a more traditional story. A good example is this population report, which we'll talk about on this show.
Right.
I did a long-form interview. And what I hope is we can get some synergy going there where we have a more traditional short-form story in the Progress, but maybe link back to more extensive information on our website.
And one thing y'all might be able to provide that a lot of the, let's face it, a lot of the young reporters at the Progress have never really had is some real institutional memory that some of these stories, whether it's the Meadow Creek Parkway or dredging or growth, they have a long backstory that sometimes goes 40 or 50 years, and it helps to be able to be aware of that backstory and some of that institutional memory when you're writing the story.
Right. Well, and that's one of the reasons we launched the wiki, Civilpedia, civilpedia.org, is to help build that community knowledge. And whether you're a journalist in town or a student in school or a student at the university, you know, or a community member, we hope that's a rich repository that everyone can draw upon so that we don't have to, relive things that we can just look up.
Yeah. So we're going to start seeing a lot more of Charlottesville Tomorrow in the Daily Progress. Are they going to be using this in other media general publications as well? Do we know? Or
don't know yet. Yeah. But I could certainly see that happening. One of the things, Coy, we looked around the country to see if there was any other example of this, and we could find no other example of this sort of what we would call beat reporting, you know, covering the local government beat, being written by a nonprofit and printed in a daily newspaper.
Yeah.
Couldn't find a single example.
In a for-profit commercial paper. Yeah.
Right. So for us, it's a way to get more people looking at our content, which we think is valuable for the Daily Progress. As you said, it leverages our wealth of experience and information and also gives them, frankly, some extra hands at a time when both of us
when they could use them.
all media organizations right now. And certainly our goal is to make sure that we're providing good coverage and that the Daily Progress is still able to come to these meetings too. I want, you know, the reporters from all media organizations to be watching local government.
Yeah. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, which recently announced a cooperative agreement with the Media General's Daily Progress here in Charlottesville. Brian, talk a little bit about how this represents a new way of doing news, a new way of doing a newspaper for a community. Because as you point out, we can find no other examples in the country right now of a nonprofit providing beat reporters for a for-profit commercial paper.
Well, I think it's sort of an example of the evolution that's happening in the newspaper world right now, and it's next-generation reporting. It's maybe one model for the future, and I think even Charlottesville Tomorrow's approach in 2005 to start showing up at government meetings, dropping down the microphones, and recording them gavel to gavel, that's been pretty unique, and I think continues to be very unique in the country.
Yeah.
And so we want to take that new media approach, the level of comfort we have with blogs and podcasting and Facebook and Twitter, and marry that with an old media enterprise that's also starting to do those things. But I think it creates a good synergy between the two organizations and gives us a model for maybe how newspapers are going to evolve.
Well, I was telling you on an email a few days ago. In fact, I think it was Sunday, right, when I learned of the news that this is national news. I mean, nobody else is doing this. This really is, as you point out, this is one model, one way that we might watch the news business evolve in the future is to see more of these nonprofits writing for our newspapers, which, number one, it says a great deal about Charlottesville Tomorrow. It says, you know, it underscores everything I've said about Charlottesville Tomorrow for years on this program, that y'all really have become the C-SPAN for our community, and you do great work. You have your detractors, you have your critics, and we certainly hear them on this program sometimes, and that's fine. That's what we're all about here. Everybody gets a voice. But it also speaks volumes about the Daily Progress, about the state that the newspaper business is in, such that they would need to look towards a nonprofit to augment what they do.
Well, I think that's an important point to emphasize. I mean, that they were willing to be creative, think outside the box, and seek out a partnership like this, I think says a lot about the local Daily Progress organization.
Yeah. Brian Wheeler, Executive Director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. We're going to take a very quick break, and when we get back, let's talk about the elections this year coming up in November. This is Charlottesville Right Now. We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org. Brian, we got big elections coming up here in November. Virginia will choose a new governor, potentially a new lieutenant governor and a new attorney general, but we also have a slew of local elections in the city and the county.
There are 11 candidates that we are tracking for city council and the board of supervisors in Albemarle County in the city of Charlottesville. And one of the things we do with each election cycle, Coy, is interview the candidates, and we take that information and assemble a voter guide. It's a nonpartisan voter guide that we mail to every household where somebody is voting from that household. So that's something also the Daily Progress is going to partner with us on. They will be printing that voter guide, and we will be taking the responsibility of assembling it and helping mail it out. So that's another good thing about our partnership with them. One of the things I thought I might throw out there, though, and we'll see if we get any phone calls in the next segment and even right now, is what questions might people want to ask the candidates running for office?
Boxers or briefs? It's very important.
I've never asked that question.
Very important, Brian. You always have to know that. Can you believe that somebody asked that? God.
So we're looking for questions that we can ask all the candidates the same way. So we want to ask all the city candidates a group of questions, all the county candidates a group of questions. Sometimes they're the same.
Yeah.
But we want to ask, you know, we don't want to just ask Mr. Smith, you know, why did you do X, Y, and Z? We want to be able to ask everyone the same question, so everyone's on the same playing field.
So you want to get them on the record about the YMCA in McIntyre Park, about the Meadow Creek Parkway, dredging, the water supply plan, affordable housing, this kind of stuff.
Or maybe a qualification for office, what's motivating them, the number one priority once they get in office, things like that. We've asked those kinds of questions in the past.
What's been the most interesting question you think you've ever asked in a voter guide?
Well, I find them all interesting.
You're a policy wonk, of course.
It's hard to pick one.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like the questions that really differentiate the candidates and help people get to know the candidate.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Interesting.
Anyone has ideas, they can email me.
Everyone's going to participate in this?
Every candidate is participating.
In the past, you've had people who have opted out, right?
Nope. Nobody has ever opted out since 2005.
That's impressive. That's pretty good.
Everyone is participating.
All right. Hold on. JR is on line one. JR, you the man. Happy Tuesday. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Trey, Coy. I know y'all are not talking about this right now, but one observation I'd like to make is something you said earlier today and yesterday also about the newspaper clipping in Progress back in 1959.
Yes, sir.
I didn't know about that clipping, although I am aware some things that were happening back about the time they were deciding to build the mall back in the early 70s, kind of 73.
Right, right.
All right. I know for the fact that it was mainly city council and a few people, a few merchants downtown that decided to do it. I know some merchants that didn't want it, and a lot of other people didn't want it, but I always felt it should have been put to a vote because it's too late now. It wasn't put to a vote. But anyway, I know that Mr. Harry O'Maskey, who was a man at Young Men's Shop, which was there where Christian's Pizza is now.
Yeah, he didn't want it.
No, and Maxwell Fogelman, who was a man, the manager of Leggett, which was there where the Cinema Theater, the Wrigley Theater is now, they didn't want it. Like I said, other people didn't want it either, but city council and a few other merchants decided to do it and went on with it.
There you go.
And I, like I said, I always felt, of course it wasn't done, but I always felt it should have been, had been a referendum put up to a vote.
Hey, if they had a referendum, you think it would have passed?
Well, that's hard to say. Back then, I don't think it would have.
Interesting. JR, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
My own personal opinion, and I've been here all my life, and there's a lot of other people that weren't in favor of it and still aren't in favor of it. But like I said, there's no use crying over spilt milk.
There you go. JR, thank you. I appreciate it, my friend. Thanks for calling the program. JR, of course, Brian is referencing the Daily Progress article that I dug up from October 29th of 1959, which the very first time the idea of a Main Street Mall in downtown Charlottesville appears in the historic record.
Mm.
And it was proposed not by City Hall, but by the Charlottesville Albemarle Chamber of Commerce.
Wow.
Which is, flies in the face of what many people think. If you just go back to the 70s, there were a lot of folks, merchants, who seemed to be against closing off Main Street.
Right.
But if you follow that idea back, it was actually a creation of the Chamber of Commerce came up with the idea.
That's the exactly the type of little nuggets that we hope to get into Sevillepedia.org.
Well, there's the article.
So thanks.
There
can
you
I
go.
Have this?
All yeah. Right. Just give me credit for digging it up.
All right. We'll give you credit.
We're going to take a break for local news and weather. And we'll continue this conversation with Brian Wheeler on the other side. And, of course, take more great calls like folks from JR joining the program anytime you want at 977-1070. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow online at sevilletomorrow.org. And where should we go next? ASAP.
ASAP.
What is ASAP?
Let's go to ASAP, ASAP.
This was the publicly funded study, right?
It was. ASAP is Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population. That's an advocacy group here in town. Jack Marshall is the president of that group. And they have...
He's got a great radio voice.
He does.
He does. He really does.
Yeah. I did a half-hour interview with him, and you can get that at sevilletomorrow.org. And it's going to be hard to boil down, you know, everything he said. The Daily Progress also did a good story on that, and I think the two complement each other, as I mentioned earlier. But this was the first study has been released related to their effort to establish an optimal population range for Charlottesville and Albemarle. And one of their, you know, they were able to get city and county support funding, and they got some private foundation funding to do this study. And, you know, I think if, you know, David Slutsky, one of the supervisors, basically said, you know, we should operate with as much information as possible about what happens to the environment as we grow. And I think that's very much what ASAP was trying to figure out, is what happens to the community as our population grows. Right now we have about 135,000 people in the city and the county. Charlottesville Tomorrow, of course, does not have a position on this research, and we're just trying to share the information here. But what was interesting, Coy, was it identified some numbers I had never seen identified before. One was 400,000 people as being the sort of build-out number for the city and county.
Where does that number come from?
It comes from analyzing the land use patterns and what our designated growth areas,
existing master plans, the homes that are in the pipeline that have been approved but not yet built, this kind of thing.
I don't know if it goes into that level of detail, but it sort of looks at the lay of the land, the type of development we allow, and the understanding of the zoning. So in the rural areas, we know, you know, the minimum lot size is 20 acres. So if you're going to subdivide the entire rural area, that gives you some reference as to how many homes you could put out there.
So Charlottesville Albemarle right now is about 135,000?
135.
How many in the... How does that break down? City's about 40, 45?
I want to say, yeah. Yeah.
This county's about 90, yeah. 95. And the build out is 400,000?
400,000.
Man.
Would
I'm
be build out.
I'm moving. Man. 400,000 people.
Well, you could.
In just the city and the county. That doesn't include the good folks, Louisa and Nelson.
Now, again, it's a hypothetical number used in the model here.
Man, I'm already crowded. Goodness gracious.
Well, and so that's an interesting. And I asked that question. You know, what is this the range that ASAP's always been looking for? Because they've talked about that a lot over the years, that they wanted to identify a range. And I said, well, are you trying to identify a cap on population? And Jack Marshall said, yes, absolutely. Everybody in the community should want to identify what that magic number is at which we don't want to grow past. So, again, that's Jack Marshall's position. But I thought the interview really got
this is good, your interview with him.
My interview with Jack Marshall really got some good information on the table. And then if you look at the research in the report, they had a scientist look at these different environmental factors. I won't go into the detail because it's sort of like, you know, me trying to repeat somebody's PhD thesis, and I'm not going to be very
good.
Don't
do it.
I'm not going to be very good at that. But the numbers I took out of the study were that at 200,000 people, right now we're at 135, when we hit 200,000, the environment starts to degrade. So different environmental factors.
200,000 would be a growth of about 50% from where we are now.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and then if...
And what does it mean the environment begins to degrade if we add 50% population?
You know, stormwater, water pollution, air pollution, issues with carbon sequestration and things like that.
Yeah.
The report goes into a lot of detail about the science of this. And it's basically they threw in, you know, all these factors about our community into this model called City Green, and they try to extrapolate what happens as the population grows. Now, this research does not talk about when the population grows. It talks about where it grows. So we know we have designated growth areas in the city and the county.
Right.
And so the focus was on that. Now, it said further that if you're okay with if you don't want to cross that line and impact the environment, you'd stop at 200,000. If you're okay with degrading the growth areas somewhat, because they're sort of a sponge that can absorb some more growth, then you could go up to 300,000 people. So one of my questions was, is that the range we're looking for? Mr. Marshall said he wasn't ready to say that's the number, because
yeah.
This is just the first of these studies.
Are they ever going to say this is the number?
I think they will.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the goal at the end of this research, is to have a specific number at which they can defend.
Yeah.
And importantly, Coy, then direct the community to say we shouldn't build infrastructure that accommodates anything more than that.
Interesting.
Roads, schools,
water
supply.
Yeah. Interesting. And the logic being that let's have a sustainable population and not be like Fairfax County.
Yeah, and you start to get into other issues.
And just keep growing and growing and growing and growing and growing and never stop. I mean, and that's their argument, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But it does raise some interesting challenges, I think, for this community, because it sets up some very difficult conversations. If the build-out population is 400,000, and let's say hypothetically the decision is 200,000, you're going to have to undo a lot of development that already exists, the by right development that people already have, right?
What do you mean undo? You mean take away permits?
Yeah, you'd have to downzone.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah,
parts of the growth area, parts of the rural area.
Yeah,
to recalibrate.
How's that going
to
happen?
Our comprehensive plan to get to that number.
Yeah, is anybody doing this in America?
Nobody has ever done this, and I asked Jack that question. Has anybody else done this?
Doesn't mean it's not a good idea. Doesn't mean there's not some merit to it, but. And this is a really, really, really outside the box.
And I, you know, he said no, nobody else has ever done it. But he thought the time was right to have that conversation, and he went into some factors of why he thought that was important.
Yeah.
But you know, on the water supply, you mentioned that one of the things Mr. Marshall was very clear about was that he didn't want ASAP to be viewed as using the water supply debate as a way to limit growth. That was not what he said their angle was.
Right.
He said...
Well, so people who support the big new reservoir have criticized them, people who oppose the reservoir, saying, oh, you're just trying to stop growth. And he's saying that's not what we're doing.
Well, he's speaking for the organization. Now,
yeah.
I think there are some individual board members of that organization who probably feel differently and do have a position on what level of growth there should be,
right,
or shouldn't be. And so anyway, he said, instead, you know, Jack gave a very thoughtful answer. He said, when I was pushing him on this, I said, really now, Jack, if we can have 200,000 people and you think we're going to have 200,000 people by 2040, should we have a water supply plan that accommodates that many people? And he said, you know, we need to figure out what that number is first. And then once we agree on a number, and importantly, he said, once we agree not to go beyond it as a community, then we build a water supply plan up to that point.
I have two thoughts. How do you say you can't build past a certain population when so much of the local economy actually depends on growth, not just there being a lot of people, but actual growth? And I'm thinking of, you know, the upper end of the food chain might be big developers and landowners, but you follow that all the way down. You got people who hang drywall and contractors and people who actually, you know, a big part of the economy depends on that growth, whether you're a real estate agent or, you see what I mean?
Right. Well, if, you know, if you reach that build out number, whatever that magic number is, and if you recalibrate your plans to lower that number, then some of those trades would not be needed, I guess, so much, right?
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
What
it would also do, and we've talked about this earlier today, wouldn't it also, if you like closed this invisible door and said, you know, Central Virginia, Charlottesville, Albemarle, we're not going to grow past a certain point, doesn't that make the existing homes in that area incredibly valuable? I mean, that you want to raise your property value, tell the rest of America, we're not building any more homes in Albemarle County. This is it. So if you want to live here, you got to pick from among these. Wow, property values would go through the roof.
I'm not an economist, but I understand your argument.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like when you have less available
supply and demand,
and people still want to be here, that's going to present some challenges
that's
for
really
affordable housing. But, you know, I don't know what I ask him, what are the policy implications of this, of picking an optimal population that is sustainable? And he said that, you know, they weren't quite ready to go into those kinds of details yet. And very much ASAP is saying they want to have a community conversation about this as they roll out some additional reports the rest of over the next several months.
Well, we'll see if we can't get Jack in here to
flesh that out
a little bit. It'd
be very interesting.
Because it flies in the face of how this country was has progressed to this point. It's such a totally different idea. I just don't see how those policy, actually making this policy, I can't see how that would be legal. I just can't see Richmond letting you do stuff like this.
Well, but Coy, if you know, one of the things when the community has gone to Richmond and said we want more power to do things like control growth and development, their response has always been, you have the power, or just rezone your land.
Right. Just downzone it if you don't want development. And
yeah. Right. And, you know, the great rezoning in Albemarle County in 1980 did that. And in large part, that was done to protect the watershed of the South Fork Ravenna Reservoir from overdevelopment, residential development, so that there wouldn't be too much sediment coming into the reservoir. The reservoir was built in 1966. It immediately started filling in with sediment because it's such a huge watershed. And so in 1980, they had enough political willpower at the time and the votes to do it. It was challenged in court, and Albemarle County prevailed with that rezoning.
So this kind of stuff can be done. You can downzone and limit growth based on limiting permits and stuff like that.
You know, in theory, I think that's possible, sure.
Yeah. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. What's the latest on this dredging? The RSWA broke news today by announcing, surprised me, I'm one of the people surprised, oh, yeah, we're for dredging.
They are doing...
really?
Well, I'm not sure I heard that soundbite, but my staff was at the meeting. I have not read their report yet, but what I did hear is that the Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority is in the middle of picking a dredging consultant. South Fork Ravenna Reservoir, as we were just talking about, has this problem of filling up with sediment, and Charlottesville City Council is very eager to have a comprehensive study done to see what it would take to restore South Fork back to its original water storage capacity. So they've put out an RFP. They've interviewed firms. They've not selected a firm yet. A committee has recommended one. That firm that's been recommended is called HDR. And today the news was HDR gave them a proposal for what it would take to do a dredging feasibility study. Not the dredging itself, just to study the dredging, right?
That was the news today?
The news today was, here's...
That's not at all what I got out of WINA's news, so...
Well, again, I was not at the meeting. But the news today was HDR gave them the first look at a proposal. $700,000 was the price tag they put on for a comprehensive dredging study of South Fork. So now what the RWSA board has to do is figure out, is that the kind of money they want to spend on this? Do they need to go back to city council and say, how bad do you really want X, Y, and Z in this package?
Well, they should have the money. They've been overcharging us for years, and everybody knows that.
So. Now, Coy.
Well, it's no secret.
So anyway, that was the news on dredging.
There you go.
As far as I know.
And you are...
Stay tuned, because we'll have a report up tomorrow.
I was going to say, you got a big dredging report coming out this weekend.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
We're doing the series Our Water, Our Future, which you can find at seavilletomorrow.org/water. It's a six-part series. Issue number 4 is coming out this weekend, and it's focused on the dredging issues around the South Fork Ravenna Reservoir.
There you go.
So now I've got to, after today's meeting, I have to go update it a little bit to make sure it's current.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. 7 before 6. Sorry about that. We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville tomorrow. Brian, I heard about... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, what you were asking me about a cell phone tower controversy.
Yeah, I heard about this. I just heard about today. I didn't know anything about it over in Key West.
And so I started, what did I consult? Google, of course. So I started Googling for the news because I didn't think we had written a story about it, but I knew I'd read something about it, right?
Yeah.
So I had this sneaky feeling somebody had written about it, and I'm Googling around, and I'm like... Suddenly, I thought I was in the Soviet Union, and the whole thing had been disappeared out of the internet. And then I remembered where it was. It was in Twitter.
Ah, you read this report in a Twitter?
I did.
As a tweet?
I was reading tweets. Sean Tubbs was covering that planning commission meeting in Albemarle County, and he was tweeting it as it happened.
Ah.
And they were discussing a cell phone tower application. Local attorney Valerie Long was representing, I believe, AT&T.
AT&T wants to put up a new cell phone tower.
And you said it was in Key West.
Yeah, it's right in Key West, like in people's backyards.
So,
and Key West, from what I understand, a lot of folks in the Key West neighborhood are pretty upset about it.
It sounds like it. And I couldn't go back and get the details because it was a tweet and not a full story. But, typically, I do know what happened was the applicant had to ask for a critical slope waiver. The place they wanted to put the cell tower needed to be on a hill, I guess.
Yeah.
And they need a waiver to do that.
Yeah.
Why do you
have these rules if they're always given waivers? That's what I don't understand.
Well, at the end of the evening, they did not get the waiver. They convinced the applicant to defer their request and go back and study a few things. So Valerie Long and AT&T will be back in front of the commission at a future meeting. But, one of the things that's very interesting, Coy, I think about our cell towers in general, and I'm not sure exactly what the specific neighborhood concerns were. So usually they're visual. What's the visual impact of looking at a tower?
Yeah. For the real ugly ones. But aren't there some that aren't that obtrusive, don't go up that high, and they look like trees?
Well, that's the thing. In Albemarle County, we have a pretty restrictive set of guidelines about how high above tree line something can be. They've got to do balloon tests and photograph it from all angles and show that to people so they can get a sense of what it will look like. And then not only that, then it has to be camouflaged to look like a tree or be painted like a tree.
That's required in the county.
That's required in Albemarle County. And that's why you don't see the old towers that you can see that are very visible. Those were done a long time ago.
Right.
The new ones, you pretty much can't see unless you know where to look.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
You're driving by and you see the little fence and the box and the
right
thing going
you
up.
You see the base of it.
But for the most part, they're pretty hard to find in Albemarle County. Now, again, you have different concerns come up. You have people talk about electromagnetic interference and potential health consequences of things like that. I know that came up in the city when there was discussion about putting a tower on top of a school. I remember that was a...
Gotta give all the kids brain damage or something.
Controversial topic there. I don't know the science on those things.
Does it give you brain damage?
I don't know the science on those things.
Sorry, you just said that. If you hold your cell phone, though, real close to your head for a long time.
I know my wife keeps telling my daughter... my wife keeps telling my daughter to switch ears.
Yeah. It'll give you cancer. I read that on the internet. It must be true.
I don't know about that.
Brian Wheeler with Charlottesville Tomorrow, SeavilleTomorrow.org. He joins us every Tuesday to talk about growth and development issues here in Central Virginia. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Coy.
Y'all have a great night.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.